was talking about the man that had the donut machine as the other side of the tape and needed a piece of emery cloth. This other fellow and I that was going around checking everything immediately dashed over to the engineering building, which was just a short distance away, and secured him a piece of emery cloth and took it back. He used it. That solved the thing right away, all of his trouble, and so he started making donuts, and he got a peck sack full, and we said that would satisfy us. He didn't need to go ahead and give us a whole hour's worth, and we had took the sack of donuts back over to the engineering building and had quite a time feeding everybody around that came around some of his donuts, and they were excellent donuts. He knew how to mix up a batch of donuts in the best fashion that there was. Another memorable thing about that home economics engineering show put on was that Clara Bow, who was then the hotshot movie actress of the time, just after she'd made It, and I had to, as the general chairman of the engineering show, had to provide an escort for to show her around and the squire around the various things during the show, and consequently I appointed myself as that, and Clara Bow was quite a gal. Some 15 years later, filling up with gasoline in Austin, Nevada, and the car drove in, and at the time she was married to Rex Bell, who was running for a political office, and I walked up to the car as she was sitting in it, and I spoke to her, and she says, "I don't remember your name, but I sure remember the time that you squired me around the engineering show at Oklahoma A&M College," which was quite a feat of memory, I thought, for her, and the many people that she met and the places she met, but she said that was one of the memorable occasions in her life, the way she was treated there at that time. In the latter part of April of that semester also, we went on a senior engineering trip. The dean and twelve students, I guess it was, three carloads of us, took off for the senior engineering trip. And we toured up to Kansas, cement plants, Kansas City, Ford assembly plant, Procter & Gamble soap factory, and such as manufacturing plants like that, on to to Sedalia, Missouri, and visited an egg canning plant where they canned eggs for the Eaton Biscuit Company, and other places where they used large quantities of eggs. We went on Sedalia, Missouri, into St. Louis, and across the Mississippi River into East St. Louis and other places, industrial places along there. One that I particularly remember was a big power plant and a great large machinery or foundry, actually, that cast and machined locomotive frames, steam locomotive frames, and they would put a, they had a lathe that they'd put a locomotive frame that probably weighed somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20 tons. They'd put that on this big lathe, which made all the bearing surfaces and bored all the holes necessary for bolting and the things onto it. And in somewhat like an hour, all of the stuff would be ready for that locomotive to have the boiler and all the other parts installed on it to make a large locomotive for the railroads. That was in the days before diesel locomotives. We also visited the construction of the St. Louis Sports Palace, I think they call it now. It was a large building that could handle three basketball games simultaneously. Had a hockey rink in it. They could put a hockey rink in it. And St. Louis Flyers played, hockey team played hockey in that place. One of the fellows in our group had worked the summer before in for the company that had the patent on the truss design that was putting in this big building, where it didn't require any posts or pillars inside of it to hold the roof up. And he stood and looked, and he says to a fellow that was showing us around, says, they're making a mistake on those roof trusses. And I says, well, how do you know? He says, well, I made the drawings for this building and drew all those sections and stuff for the these trusses on here, and said, so-and-so up there's braces the wrong way. And I went and looked at the drawings, had his name on them, and sure enough, they did have a bunch of the braces wrong, which would have, wouldn't have held up the roof. And we had quite a time then with the contractor supplying us with places to stay and a few meals while we were there around St. Louis. Helped out on expenses considerably. We left St. Louis and came back through on US 66, visited the Rollo School of Mines in Missouri, and near Rollo we saw the cross-country runners. Funny thing, I don't remember who set the thing up now or who the winner was, but these people started out in New York City racing and running. I think they'd travel running or walking, however they could want to do it, They do it 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. And they were strung out for 15, 20 miles along U.S. 66 highway at that time, there near Rollo. And they were going, and they did finish in Los Angeles. And they, fellow that won it, got $10,000, which wasn't a bad figure of money in those days. We got back as far as Joplin, Missouri, there, leaving Joplin on U.S. 66, it was a whole line of cars. I was a tail car, and they all stopped very suddenly, one bumping the other in front. Most of them wasn't hard enough to damage their car a great deal. Broke out a few headlights and one thing and another. I dropped quite a ways behind the group. I was speeding up to catch up with them, and I couldn't stop. And I jumped across the road to the other side, got off on a grassy spot, and a guy coming the other way got excited and come off and hit me head on. There we were in his hometown. He was a deputy sheriff of the county, and so it was, of course, my fault. And we immediately got a fellow from a garage out to estimate what it cost to fix his car up. And he drove up there, and he got out, he looked at the car, and he says, well, he says, he's getting his car fixed up again. And he says, why? He says, well, this is the third time that this car has been wrecked like this, or something like this. And he says, that fellow shouldn't be allowed to drive. And wasn't anybody hurt. And well, about a year later, I noticed the paper, this fellow, while he was still deputy sheriff, had another accident and he was killed. And that time it was definitely his fault, and his insurance company was really hung. The other two cars loaded up with the fellow was riding with me, and the dean stayed with me. And it was a Saturday, and the Ford garage kindly got three fellows down, and the next morning, about 9 o'clock, they went to work on that car that I had, which was my folks' new Model A Ford four-door sedan. And in about an hour and a half, they had the thing all ready to go again. And so the dean and I went on into Stillwater that Sunday, and it was all back into class next Monday morning. And we had to write a report for the classes we'd missed. We had to write a report on what we'd seen on the trip pertaining to our engineering part that we were taking. We had mechanicals and electricals and industrial and civil engineers are all in the group. So we all had to write this report, which They gave us a grade on for while we were gone. We were gone 10 days, and we had to bone up on what we had missed so we could be able to take the tests. And those that weren't straight A's could take the final exam. Maybe with my straight A's, and I didn't have to take any exams at all. Helped, I know, some, because that some of the stuff I'd missed, I didn't have to bone up on. During the final examination period, I was a loss, as I didn't have to take any of them. It went on for 3 days. I had to sit around and entertain myself, because nobody would do anything with me, because they were all either boning for exams or taking exams. And there wasn't many of my friends that didn't have to take most examinations. I think about two of them. And they were lived close and could go home. I couldn't. I lived too far away to make it home for 3 days. On the evening of the 28th of May, 1929, I had the baccalaureate service, and the next day it would be the graduation service, and my folks came down to it, and at 10:32 in the morning, I was handed a slip of paper saying I could get my diploma at the bookstore, college bookstore, immediately after graduation, and turned my cap and gown in. So I rushed right over to the college bookstore, turned my cap and gown in, and got my diploma and degree, and went back, and folks and a girlfriend and one of her friends all jumped in a car and went to Tulsa, and interviewed the general superintendent and assistant general superintendent of the Shell Petroleum Corporation. And he says, just before I left, he says, now call me on the last day of May and I'll tell you where to report to. So I went home for a few days, went home, of course, on the 30th of May, and on the last day of May, he said, I called the man, he told me, he says, you report to our plant, gasoline plant, at Marshall, Oklahoma. So the next day, I proceeded to Marshall, Oklahoma, and went to work in a natural gas processing plant there in, near Marshall, Oklahoma, in what they call the Marshall oil field. I had been told that my salary would be $125 a month. After I got to the plant, I found out that the working time was from 7 till 12 in the morning and 1 to 5 in the afternoon. And no overtime, 7 days a week. I was listed on the payroll as a trainee engineer, roused about, and started breaking in as a oiler in the engine rooms, engine compressor room, and I did that for a week or so, and went into the roustabout gang to do painting, and that lasted for a few weeks, and some 5 or 6 weeks. Then I was moved into the laboratory, and I worked in the laboratory until a treating plant to treat sour gasoline got set up, and I was made operator of that treating plant. I lived in a bunkhouse along with a number of other fellows working, unmarried men. The two fellows about my age, however, neither one of them was a college graduate. One of them had had a couple of years of college, and the other had only finished high school. We piled around together. One of them had an old Star automobile, which was giving lots of trouble, and he and I made several trips to Enid, Oklahoma in it, and always barely got back with the thing. He finally turned it in, and as it wasn't what they claimed it would be, so they sued him for the balance of payment, and we went to court, and I was his main witness, and after I got through testifying and telling some of the experiences we'd had with the thing getting home, the judge threw the case out of court, told the people to come get the car and reimburse him for two-thirds of what he'd paid on it. And about that time, another fellow had had a Model A Ford, a 1928 Model A Ford Roadster. And he was quitting and going to work another place, and wanted to get rid of that car, and I took it over for just what he owed on it yet. That was the first motor vehicle that I ever owned outright. I think this happened in somewhere around the middle of August. And I took this car over. I was going with a girl that was a teaching school about 50 miles over from where I was working. And one night I took her back to the place where she was rooming and boarding. It was a little country school. And as I left, I was on a detour, a road I didn't know too well, and I came to a corner quicker than I expected to come to it, and plowed into a bank, and I had to get the car fixed up. I had to borrow money to do that, And this happened in November. No, it happened in October. And made the oil show in Tulsa, and with a college friend of mine and a girlfriend. And not long after that, I got word that I was going to move into Tulsa office on the 1st of December. And another fellow that was there decided he'd like to have the car. So I turned it over to him for just what I owed on it yet, which was about, oh, something a little less than $100. I had, by that time, I'd paid the loan off, getting it repaired after the accident, so that he got a car with a fairly good price. Around the 1st of September, they had sent in a new trainee who worked for the Special Products Department out of St. Louis. And as the plant I was at there was one of their big deals was the special products, propane and butane, pentanes. And this new fellow came in, had a degree in from MIT in management engineering. And I was at that time working in the laboratory, and I would have five or six seven car loads of gasoline that I would have to test, run an Engler distillation, vapor pressure, gravity, and a few other tests on this gasoline. And I had two distillation units that I could run two distillations at a time, so I could get those started and run the vapor pressure and make the gravity and run the vapor pressure and some of the other tests. And the Engler distillation would not quite be through yet, so I would put my morning paper down between the two receivers off the distillation. I could check at each 10 cc's about the boiling temperature and read the paper in between. And this trainee came in one morning and cleaned my paper off where I had it between the two distillation receivers and put a typewriter in there and said that I could make out the billings for these carloads of gasoline to go out on the railroad. And I told him, get them out. I wasn't going to do that. I couldn't run a typewriter, and it wasn't my job anyway, and get them out of there. He went to the superintendent of the plant then, who was a very mild-mannered fellow and very excellent, one of the best superintendents that I ever observed, and I learned a lot from him about management of a gasoline plant. This fellow went to him and told him that I was very uncooperative, that I didn't want to save time, that I was reading the paper when I could be making out those bills of lading on the typewriter. And the superintendent, I'd noticed, had been watching him all the time. He was doing this other thing through the door. He'd, when I told the fellow that I wasn't going to do it, get the stuff out of there, the superintendent had been walking around watching. And because I told that fellow that, he went back into his office. And when the guy went in and told him, he says, well, you know, he's right. That isn't part of his job. And he said, if I'd have been him, he said, I wouldn't have been so mild-mannered the way I told you. He says, I'd have probably picked the typewriter up and thrown it at you. And he said, if he can find time like he does to read the morning paper, why, that's okay with me.